My name is Daisha Clay. I'm the audio librarian here at Classical 91.7. While I'm a real librarian, I have a deep, dark
secret.
I know very little about classical music. I grew up listening to rock, and I know something about jazz. But when it comes to classical, but I really want to learn. So, every week on this show, a classical music expert will give me a piece of classical music they think I should know, and then we'll discuss it. Come learn with me in the classical classroom. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Classical Classroom. I'm Daisha Clay, and as some of you listeners may recall, in episode 60 with Mark DiClaudio, I made the terrible mistake of mentioning that I used to play the trumpet. So, of course, producer Todd seized upon this golden opportunity to humiliate me. And since that is apparently the secondary theme of Classical Classroom, the humiliation of the host, Todd has decided to add a new dimension to my classical music education, and he says that I actually need to play the music. So, to that end, today we have not one teacher, but the trumpet section of River Oaks Chamber Orchestra, who we are listening to right now, and they will be giving me an instrument to play that I have not played in a lot of years. First, we've got Mr. George Chase. George went to the Curtis Institute and to Rice University. He's performed with symphonies and operas literally all over the world. He taught at the University of Houston's Moore School, and he now plays with many groups here in Houston, such as the River Oaks Chamber Orchestra and Opera in the Heights. Welcome, George.
Thank you very much. I'm just here responding to the hashtag humiliate Daisha, so I don't know if this is the right place for that, but yeah.
Next, we've got Mr. Jason Adams. He's been teaching and playing trumpet for over 30 years. He studied with Roger Murtha and Chris Gecker at the Hart School and the Manhattan School of Music. He plays, he records, he appears as a soloist, and so much more. Welcome, Jason.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
Okay, so what are we doing here today? I you're teaching me a lesson. I may have to actually play the trumpet.
Oh yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get into it.
So here we go. Okay.
Okay.
So what we're going to start with is the mouthpiece. All right. So somebody once defined the trumpet as being an instrument in which you make a strange sound into one end and hope and pray that when the sound gets out the other end of it, that it sounds a little bit better.
Yeah.
And so that in mind, I am grabbing my mouthpiece.
Okay.
And my trumpet. All right. So what we're going to do is we're going to put the mouthpiece just underneath your lips, like you're blowing across a Coke bottle.
Okay.
All right. Nice and easy, nice and relaxed, almost like a flute. And as we do that, as we blow across it, now we're going to roll the mouthpiece up so it's touching our lips.
Hey!
There we go.
First try.
It sounded like a dying duck.
Daffy Duck is in the building, people. So. Excellent. So we are off to the races. So let's try the same thing again. And this time, let's just focus this the corners of our lips just outside the mouthpiece just a little bit as we do that. So let's do the same thing again. Take a big breath. Yeah, there we go.
I don't know. I think you're a pro.
I think so.
Give me a head rush.
Yeah. We go to the Red Cat downtown to find out she's been playing some sessions that night. All right. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to hand our new friend here an old trumpet. This is an old Selmer trumpet from the 60s. And so what we're going to do is place that mouthpiece into the receiver of the trumpet, into the small end of the trumpet, and do the same thing.
Okay.
So let's try that. And she, it looks like she's remembering really well how to hold it. So I think we're in an excellent shape here.
You put your pinky in the hook.
If you like. Sure.
You put your fingers on the key.
So what we're talking about, for those of you who are not able to see right now, is that on the top of the trumpet, you have the three vowels in a row, and then sort of next to that is a little hook, and you can put your finger in there. I usually just put my finger, my pinky in that hook for page turns or if I'm using a certain kind of a mute, like a plunger mute or a Harmon mute. For special effects.
By the way, the pinky in the hook is very controversial.
Yeah. Really?
You've got to be careful with the pinky in the hook thing. Yeah.
Why you really is do. It's very controversial.
Well, apparently it slows your third finger, your ring finger, down on the vowels. And something about one tendon between your ring finger and your pinky. And some people will tell you that the pinky actually goes on top of the crook. Some people will tell you in the crook, and I've seen that and everything in between.
That's so crazy.
I think through the years, I've wound up with a kind of funny habit of just kind of sticking it sort of on the side of the crook.
Huh.
Normally, I don't put my finger in there a whole lot. I don't have any, you know, terrible feeling one way or the other about it. You know, if you feel a little pain, you know, I find scotch helps with that to some extent. Helps with a lot of things, really.
Spoken,
but anyway,
like, as far as trumpet
goes, yeah, so there you go.
Great antiseptic as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You have to, you know, it's a scotch you've been practicing for. So anyway, what I usually do is just leave my finger just sort of floating in space, like my attention span, and then I just place my rest of my fingers over the valve section. So that's how I normally play.
All right. That feels like madness to me. Okay. All right. So what's happening
all
next?
All right. So now what we're going to do is the same thing we do with the mouthpiece, except we're going to blow across the mouthpiece, and then we'll just roll the trumpet up until it's on your face. And we won't use any vowels, and you get whatever sound you get.
Okay.
So let's go for it.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's
come back very, very quickly.
Absolutely. That's
nice.
Great.
Takes you back to seventh grade, doesn't it?
I think I'm going to go and get a new trumpet after this show and start my new career.
There you go. Like Jason said, the heady smell of valve oil. You know, just that whiff of Alcast just mixed with the... a little scotch. Anyway, so back to the trumpet here. So that's a G on our trumpet. Now, some of you out in there in Radio Land might think, wait a minute, George, that's not a G. That's an F. And to those of you out there thinking that, I salute you. I invite you to buy me a glass of scotch. But anyway, but in addition to that, you're absolutely right. That's a concert F. And the reason why is that the trumpets that we're playing right now are B-flat instruments, which means when we play our C, it sounds a concert B-flat. And so all the music written for a B-flat trumpet is written up a whole step from what it actually sounds.
Is that true?
That is true. And it's done only to confuse and bewilder people across the world.
That is crazy. So, okay. So if I was playing with another instrument.
Yeah, say piano, for example. Yeah.
The sheet music would look different?
It would look different. That's exactly right. It will look different. So if
my
you're
mind
playing
is blown.
A piece, yeah, it's crazy stuff. So if you're playing a piece, say in that is written in your key of C, a piano player would have to be playing in the key of B flat.
Why on earth would the people who created instruments and musical notation do that?
Well, you can go all the way back to some of the very earliest written down music for the trumpet. And before the invention of the valve, the trumpet, you basically just had a tube there, and you had to pick up a different tube for whatever key the music is that you were playing in, so you'd have
this
a shorter
is
one.
Jason, by the way.
This
sorry,
is
I
Jason.
Forgot to
yes.
introduce you in the question.
So,
just as a general rule of thumb, if it's a more lucid explanation and just clear, that's generally going to be Jason. Okay, back to you. Okay.
Well, so at any rate, and for some reason, I guess just music being music, that tradition just kind of stuck. Even once we got the valves, there's lots of pieces you'll find where you'll be playing a trumpet part written in one key that sounds in another key, and you're playing it on a different keyed trumpet just because of the way the instrument sounds. So trumpet players are often very confused, and I think that explains the scotch.
But they're so attractive, and that makes it all better. Confused,
absolutely.
You know.
But it's a very strange thing that they didn't have valves, and so they would go to a rehearsal performance with your instrument, and then it was a box of what was called crooks, which is different lengths of tubing. And so if you wanted to play in a higher key, then you would pull out your longer crook and put in a shorter one, and then you were able to play that part. Otherwise, you'd be playing notes that would not fit into that chord or into that key.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Well, and so here we are today.
So here we are today.
With confusing sets of sheet music. And
so it's better, and you can look at it in a way that they soldered on those crooks. You can think of it like that, uh-huh. onto the trumpet,
okay.
and then attach them with the valves. And then when you push a valve down, all it does is it opens up that chamber of tubing on the trumpet, allowing you to play different pitches than you would be able to play otherwise.
As a matter of fact, I think probably if you play your G right now and press down your second valve, the one in the middle there, we'll hear the pitch of it. As long as you hold a nice steady sound, we'll hear the pitch of it drop a half step.
Or we'll see a unicorn, one of the two. I saw a unicorn. Wow.
And there it is.
There you go. Beautiful.
Okay. Nice.
Excellent. So if you do the same thing again, and except push down first valve instead of second valve, you go down by a whole step, or we'll see a unicorn. There you go.
Jesus.
Excellent.
Lovely.
Excellent.
I have to tell you, that's really a pretty nice sound for
very much so.
It really
thanks.
Is, in all seriousness.
It's been at least 10 years since I've picked up a horn, so this is
now, that's very impressive that it's coming back in that way.
But I do this with my lips a lot, just regularly. I just go, so I'm, you know, my muscles are ready.
I do that in traffic a lot, but for completely different reasons.
Yeah,
but
brass instruments are kind of like the voice, and they're kind of unique because what's actually vibrating on a brass instrument, what creates the sound, is your body, because it is your lips actually
doing the
vibration.
Right, as opposed to a reed or...
Right,
exactly.
Or percussion instrument, something more external or something you strike. So I think in that way, it really is an instrument that you have to have sort of an internal picture of the music you're trying to play before you can just, you know, get it to come out of the horn.
Right.
And sometimes you get lucky. And believe me, there's plenty of times when I've looked at a note on the page and said, I have no idea what that's going to sound like. And I press my buttons down and I get lucky. But it's never quite the same as when you really have a good idea of what you want the music to sound like. And
But that kind of brings up something interesting, which is the physicality, the sort of physical fitness that's necessary to play a trumpet.
Right.
To play any instrument, but specifically the trumpet. Like, a lot of my warbliness when I was playing just now was because my lips are not strong enough, basically. These little tiny muscles and my, you know. But, you know, it's beyond that. It's my, like, my tongue has forgotten how to like, make notes. My, you know, I mean, it's all. So can you guys talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. You know, the famous ballet dancer Brezhnikov talked about, you know, someone asked him why he practices so much, you know, why he would train so much. And he says, because the muscles forget, you know, and it's absolutely true on any brass instrument, particularly a high brass instrument like trumpet. That you're dealing with very small muscle groups. You can't abuse them, but yet at the same time, you're constantly training them and trying to stay in shape and try to stay ahead of the next thing you're about to perform. So if you're going to play a long brass quintet concert, as Jason and I have done a number of times, you really have to make sure that you're playing quite a bit every day leading up to that, you know. So
it's kind of like running or something like that, where, you know, you will fail if you just go out of the gate attempting to run 5 miles. Likely you're going to fail. But if you run a little bit at a time and you add a little bit at a time, you kind of are able to progress.
Yeah, absolutely. And I tell my students, you know, that it's, you wouldn't expect to, you know, get out of bed and begin sprinting like as soon as you get your sneakers on, you know, and nor would you try to run a marathon at your sprinting speed, you know, so you have to be thoughtful about how you're warming up and stretching like you would, you know, when you're running, and then be very thoughtful about how you're going to do your practicing and you know, and I know that I've had the experience where, you know, you're in a rehearsal or preparing something and you think, oh, you know, this is a little more difficult than I feel like it ought to be for me to play, you know? So that means that when I go home and I warm up, I'm going to do a little more of that kind of thing. If I can isolate exactly what's going on and sort of develop my ability to do that and hopefully enhance it over a period of time.
That really brings up a good point too, which is that I think a lot of times when trumpet players especially practice, we're practicing for a particular situation. Uh-huh. If you're getting ready to play like in a symphony orchestra, the playing that you do in an orchestra is probably some of the most intense physical trumpet playing that you do, but it's typically in very short bursts. You'll play very, very hard for 30 seconds. So, you know, it might be akin to like a sprinter if you're a runner.
It's not just your lips. It's like your cheeks, too, because I don't know, for non-trumpet players out there, like you have to, unlike Dizzy Gillespie,
right,
who poofed out his cheeks like a chipmunk, you're supposed to actually hold your cheeks in. And that actually takes a great deal of strength to like stop yourself from like, so you've got the cheek action, you've got the lip action, you've got this sort of just physical like familiarity, the muscle memory in your fingers and stuff like that.
Right.
Should we do a little bit more of a lesson? And then
absolutely.
I know you brought in some examples that
absolutely.
You wanted to.
Yeah,
okay,
absolutely.
So what am I going to learn next?
So what I thought we could do is go back to the mouthpiece for a moment.
Okay.
And this time I thought we could stretch just a little bit more. So let's start in that. That's whatever note you start off with, whatever it comes to you naturally, whatever that might be, doesn't even matter. And trying to go as low as you can from that note.
Okay.
There you go.
It's funny if you can't see it, but your head just completely, your chin just went all the way down to your chest while you were doing that. And truthfully, that has absolutely nothing to do with it, but it just feels right.
It does.
I know when I'm teaching kids, we spend a lot of time saying, no, you really don't have to move your head because their trumpets are crashing into each other and stuff. And it just feels like the right thing to do, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's like I'm going down. Yeah, I must look down now.
Yeah, so try the same thing.
Okay.
And I'll do it with you. And, and this time, let's think about the breathing. So inhale for a beat and then just let it out.
Okay.
So, ready? Yeah, there we go.
Lovely.
That's good. All right.
Okay. I feel like I'm ready to go.
There we go. Hey, there we go. All right. So now what we're going to do is I brought a trumpet method book, the Arbonne Complete Conservatory Method for the cornet and for the trumpet. Mm-hmm. And so we are going to give her a blast from the past here. I'm sure she's looked at this. It's been ages, though. So let's take a look at number five.
Number five.
Yeah.
All
let's
right.
Play through that one.
Okay. Let's see if I can even remember the notes. Okay.
And the trumpet, for those out there in radio land, is generally a treble clef instrument. So if you are a piano player, it would be the clef that you'd use, generally speaking, for your right hand.
All right.
So the first note would be
the E.
Yep.
Okay, so.
I think that was the fourth note we did today.
Was not expecting you to go through the whole thing like that. That's awesome.
Whoa.
that was something.
Totally lightheaded now.
Yep.
I feel the...
You feel the burn?
Yeah.
Excellent.
What I really liked about that was watching you tap your foot. You had great rhythm going. It's just like we went right back to junior high, all the things they told you. Yep. That's really funny. And when you were tapping your foot couldn't quite reach the ground, so you're sort of bouncing up and down in your chair and getting that sound. It was really very fun.
I can't believe I remembered the notes.
And that you produced some of those sounds. I was not expecting, as you got to the, some of the higher tessitura stuff, that that was going to just come out.
And tessitura?
To range the higher notes that you had to play.
Tessitura. Higher range.
Yes.
I did that. I did some tessitura, you guys.
Absolutely.
In case you were wondering.
Yeah. Masterful.
That was great.
Yeah.
So, stoked.
All right. So Jason, how would you critique her techniques as it is?
First of all, I really would say it was great.
Yeah.
Thanks. Know?
And I probably would talk a little bit about posture and getting the feet a little more solid on the floor so that the body isn't kind of tempted to wiggle around while you're tapping your foot. Mm-hmm. But you were doing a wonderful job with rhythm. And I would say, generally speaking, the only thing I would say is just to enjoy it and be even more confident with it. And you sounded like you were flipping out a little bit from time to time, like, whoa, what's next? And if you know anything about being a trumpet player, you know that a lot of it is just that you got to put on a good show and you got to kind of be overconfident and say, yeah, I can, I can do this. I did this, you know, in my sleep last night.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
nice. Okay. All right.
Absolutely. That's, that's great. That's great.
And that's page 11 of the Arban book. And I think there's only about 360 to go. So I think we're almost there.
So, so we're going to be camping out here. This is going to be a part of the next fundraising drive here.
They'll have to kick us out of the studio.
Yep.
Absolutely, yeah. But luckily for us, the door locks from the inside. So, you know, we're going to be here for a while. No, just bad joke.
Well, okay, so I've played. Now, weren't you guys going to play something?
We certainly could.
I would love to hear you play something.
There we go.
Because now that people have been tortured by myself, they should hear something good.
All right.
Let's do it. This is actually by George and I both took trumpet lessons with this guy. This is Chris Gecker. He wrote a book of 44 duos for two trumpets, and we're going to play number one.
Yeah, Chris played in the American Brass Quintet for many years. Now he teaches at University of Maryland and is a very fine trumpet player. All right.
Who's playing the top part, George?
Oh.
See, now, you can tell the age of a trumpet player by this following discussion, because a young trumpet player will fight about getting to play the first part, that top part. And an older trumpet player is going to fight about who gets to play the lower part.
The lower part, exactly right.
I would like to play the lower part.
So all right, got it. Yeah. You got it. My next round must be on you. All right.
That was awesome, you guys. And tell me what that piece was called again?
That was the first duo by Chris Gecker.
Called Number One.
Number One.
I like that. I like that a lot. Well, thank you guys so much for being here today.
Thank you very much for having us. It was a real pleasure.
It has been, despite the humiliation, it's been really fun.
So just remember, it's if you on Twitter, it's hashtag humiliate Daisha. So it's just right out there.
I thought it was a sharp sign, humiliate Daisha.
Sharp sign.
We call that a hashtag.
Yeah, we call it. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
Musician humor. All right. Everybody, for more Classical Classroom, go to houstonpublicmedia.org/classroom. There you will find myriad links to all of the ways that you can listen to and interact with us, including, but not limited to, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, Twitter, and Tumblr. Make sure to follow us, rate us, review us, and most importantly, tell your friends and family that we are better than cats and that you want to listen to us again and again. P.S. You will also find host humiliating video of this episode on our page. Thanks to Todd see what I did there? Holslander, for making us sound pretty today. Thanks to Program Director St. John Flynn for just being him. Thanks to Jason Adams and to George Chase for being here today. Thanks to me for saying stuff. But above all, Thanks to you for listening. We'll catch you next time.